So I've been working on my authorization service, and it's totally sweet. It's only taken me 6 months to build it. Just 6 months. I started implementing some basic RBAC library, but that wasn't enough, obviously. So I designed relationship-based fine-grained authorization for the highest security possible. And then, to make it super fast, I used a GPU tower, running in my mom's basement, of course, connected via optic cable to bare metal server at my local esports lounge, permissions, restrictions, and admin. Nailed it.
Wait. Whatever you did sounds cool, but like, there's also another option.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with permit.io. Permit is the full-stack authorization platform created so you never have to build permissions again. Build and manage permissions for any application with policy as code, APIs, developer-friendly SDKs, and user-facing UIs. Permit is an end-to-end authorization platform built on top of open-source policy engines. It's high-performing, gets decisions in less than 10 milliseconds, and uses a hybrid approach where config is in the cloud, but data and decisions are made locally. Not only is it intuitive, it lets you implement fully functional authorization in 5 minutes, not 6 months, and in the code base you prefer. Check out the link in the show notes or go to permit.io to learn more. That's permit.io. Sign up for Permit and stop rebuilding auth.
The hardest thing for us was deciding if we were going to like niche down or not, because in the early days we were more generalist, and we'd worked with nearly 1,000 companies prior to deciding to go all in on just this early stage startup community. We did this audit of who are the clients that, one, we like working with the most. Like, where do we actually get excited? And two, who are the happiest that are with us? The more that we looked at the clients that we'd worked with, it really just kept coming back to these early stage companies who we were able to get some media coverage for, that raised money and that kept working with us months after that. I'm Michael Hummel, and I'm the CEO and founder of Establish.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
It's 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing at the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
Took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want
it. It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labbart. And today, how Michael Hummel is giving you a way to ignite your startup by powering growth and getting traction. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools lack proper security, putting sensitive data at risk. With Kiteworks MFT, companies can send automated or ad hoc files in a fully integrated, highly secure manner. The solution is FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense and has been so since 2017. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. This episode is sponsored by ClearQuery. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. With Ask ClearQuery, you can find valuable insights into your data using plain English. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify your data analytics with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. Michael Hummel has a different perspective on tech and startups than most people in this realm. His background is in marketing, and prior to his current venture, he was running a lead gen marketing firm. Outside of his professional life, he is married, living in Puerto Rico, and has a miniature husky. He's picked up spearfishing, which sounds wicked fun. When I asked what was the biggest fish he caught, he laughed and mentioned that he sticks to the reefs and the smaller fish. Starting out, Michael founded his current venture focused on PR, i.e. public relations, and he and his team did this because it was aligned with his background. Fast forward, his company is aiding startups to raise capital by focusing on three key pillars. This is the creation story of Establish.
So Established Now, as it stands, is a firm that specializes in helping early stage, pre-seed through Series B startups raise capital. And we do it in a few different ways. So our belief is that a lot of the early stage capital raising process has a lot to do with perception, right? So venture capital is driven on what is this company building? How do we know it's going to be the next big thing? And how well can that company communicate that to investors so that they actually believe they're going to be the one that's going to do it? Because every startup out there says, I'm building the next big thing. There's no founder out there that would actually try and say that they're not building that. Part of our philosophy is essentially looking at, we call them the three pillars. There's three things that any startup needs in order to become desirable in the eyes of an investor. First, we call it a narrative. So they have to have a good story and they have to have the ability to articulate it in a way, articulate their vision in a way that gets investors excited and gets investors to see that it's not just a concept in their mind. It's something that they have so clearly thought through that it gets the investor excited about the idea. You know what I mean? Because if the startup founder can't do that for an investor, they're not going to be able to do it when they go to market. And the second part of narrative is from our PR background. We believe that market signals are what investors are looking for. So your startup at the earliest stages are getting talked about in news outlets or from influencers in their industry. They are able to stand out from the noise of all the other startup founders out there. Pillar number two is the more obvious one, where it's traction, right? Every single startup nowadays is hearing traction, you need to come back when you have more, from every investor. It's just what it is. VC is becoming more and more like private equity, and sort of our way of helping startups overcome this is we do a traction assessment, and it's an exercise any startup could do on their own, but essentially looking at similar companies that have successfully closed around recently, I'd say in the last 12 months would be good to look for. What did they accomplish? What was it about their product? What was it about maybe their actual like user base? If you can reach out to that founder and have a conversation with them and see what did they actually do in order to get funded? Because it's likely that those are the metrics you should then align and aim for and be communicating as the first milestone to investors that you're meeting with. So we essentially come up with a go-to-market plan to help with those metrics and expedite that. And then the last thing we do is we have our own network of investors where we essentially connect startups with investors to expedite the pitching process because it takes so much time to go to events, get an introduction and so forth. Just having one network where you're able to get, our average client gets around 62 meetings with an investor when working with us. So it makes it so it's this one-stop shop for all the three big components that go into a fundraising process. So that's what we do.
Tell me about the first version of Established, like what you might call your MVP, right? And you mentioned starting towards the PR space, right? Tell me about that first version. How long did it take you to bring it to life? And, you know, what sort of tools were you using, frameworks, processes, or even actual tools to make it come to fruition?
We started out as a PR firm because it was just like more in line with our marketing background. And my previous company got featured in the media by like happenstance. And I saw how impactful it was when other people saw third-party people basically talking about me. And it was kind of like this ripple effect where I was like, man, I did not change anything about my business. I'm actually doing the exact same thing, but now I'm getting all this recognition from clients, past coworkers, and so forth. And it was this really aha moment. And the MVP version of this is we were just a PR firm. We got our startup clients featured in news outlets, and we started to notice like our clients were raising capital and they were like our happiest and most successful clients. So the MVP version of this was just really the narrative portion of our current three pillar option that we have is we got some media coverage for the companies that we would work with. And that alone was getting some of our clients funded, or it was something that played a part that they would put credit towards their fundraising process.
Staying on that first version, right, where it all started, you got to make certain decisions and trade-offs, right? And I hear one of them in the, you know, we started in PR because that's where our background aligned. Maybe tell me some of the things you had to work through in that original inception of Established and how you coped with the decisions you had to make.
the hardest thing for us was deciding if we were going to like niche down or not. Because in the early days, we were more generalist and we'd worked with nearly 1,000 companies prior to deciding to go all in on just this early stage startup community. We were doing like a lot of volume. I think we've published 15,000 articles at this point for all of our different clients in many different industries. And we went through the process ourselves about 2 years ago of getting private equity back. And this was like the moment where we started realizing, first off, how difficult it is to raise capital. Okay, so I had to step away from day-to-day operations of the business for around 6 months while I was going through the due diligence process with this private equity firm. And I have a team. So I actually have a team that was in place, able to manage all of that. And that was really hard. We were not able to grow in the way we wanted, but we still had to hit certain numbers to make sure we would be eligible and we didn't blow it essentially during the due diligence process for this PE firm. Once we started working with this firm, we did this audit of who are the clients that one, we like working with the most, like where do we actually get excited? And two, who are the happiest that are with us? The more that we looked at the clients that we'd worked with and the results that they were getting, it really just kept coming back to these early stage companies, these early stage founders who we were able to get some media coverage for that raised money and that kept working with us months after that. So we just knew something was there. It was a very tricky thing to work through. It might sound obvious in hindsight. However, when you're so accustomed to working with literally so many different industries at different stages, and then you decide one day after auditing your clients, you're just going to stop accepting all of these old clients and you're going all in on one. It was a pretty pivotal moment for us.
This episode is sponsored by CashFly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where CashFly comes in. CashFly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, CashFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only CashFly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools are dated and lack the security that today's remote workforce demands. Companies that continue relying on outdated technology put their sensitive data at risk. And that's where Kiteworks comes in. Kiteworks MFT is absolutely the most secure MFT on the market today. It has been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. Through FedRAMP, Kiteworks' level of security compliance provides a fast route to CMMC compliance, saving customers time, effort, and money. Kiteworks MFT makes it easy for users to send automated or ad hoc files via fully integrated shared folders and email. Administrators can manage policies in a unified console and create custom integrations using their API. Did we mention it's secure? The level of security with Kiteworks solution is rare to find. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com. We're moving forward. You've got some traction. You are getting feedback, some attention from a lot of different things. How did you progress and mature, establish moving forward? And I'm curious about how you went about creating your roadmap and what sort of things or criteria were you using to decide, okay, this is the next most important thing to address or to create with Establish?
There was probably two really important considerations in the beginning of this. One of the advisors for us, our portfolio operating partner, essentially, he was an XY Combinator guy. So he had built startups, he had raised capital himself. And so it was one of those things where we were able to just ask from his perspective. It was an inside look into what these tech companies that are going out to raise capital are going through. You know what I mean? Like, we really got to sit down with him and we got access to a lot of his network, and that sort of helped develop the roadmap. The second thing was we really just asked a lot of our customers, right? No one's better to ask in terms of product improvement, in terms of customer experience improvement, than the customer themselves. So we started just listening, really taking into account what are the things that we are missing, or what are the strengths that we have that we could continue to supply to our client base that's going to give them a better chance of the end result, which is raising money. I think the first step for us was, let's just listen to people that have gone through this and have been successful, but also people who have worked with us are going through this problem currently, and what are they asking for? And of the things that they're asking for, what are the things that we are uniquely positioned to deliver on in a really quality way, so that we can take off time from their plate, we can take off financial constraints where maybe they need to hire multiple companies or hire employees, because I'm sure everyone knows when you're building a startup, you're on a shoestring budget. Making sure that we pulled all of those main constraints away, that was how we started to develop our roadmap.
I hear you saying we. Tell me about your team. Tell me about how you built that team, and what do you look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
Team really is everything. Just about 3 years ago, two years ago, we had a team of like four people, and now we're nearing 30. And what I've realized after making a lot of mishires, because I think that that's probably the only way to learn is hiring the wrong people, unfortunately, is for us, we care most about culture fit. People that we feel are going to, obviously they have to have some background in what we're doing and they have to pass general standards there. But every single person that has not worked out for us, it's typically due to the culture fit issue. It's not like a competency issue. We want everyone that works with us to love the startup ecosystem, to be fired up about the opportunity to go out and help people raise money, to be passionate about the subject in general, so that they want to learn in their free time or want to go to events and meet founders. I don't think that's something that is easily faked. In fact, I don't know if you can. We essentially are looking for people who have that fire in them to join what we're doing. And those are the people that we get constant feedback from our customers around, like, they want to take our employees. They want to take our team members because they enjoyed their interaction so much. And they're like, when you need a job, let me know. And it's a good feeling to have that, even from your clients you're interfacing with. The team that you have interfacing with them on a day-to-day basis, they enjoy the interaction so much that they would want them to join their team. That's what we look for when we bring new people on.
This episode is sponsored by Cashfly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where Cashfly comes in. Cashfly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, Cashfly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only Cashfly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5-terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. Hello. Welcome to the Data Analytics Club. Do you know the password?
No, I didn't know there was one.
Do you know how to code?
No.
Do you know how to query data?
Like, ask a question? I guess not.
I see. Then you can't be in this club. Sorry. Goodbye. Don't be left out of the Analytics Club. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. ClearQuery provides you with the information you need without requiring you to do the heavy lifting. Their Ask ClearQuery feature allows you to ask questions in plain English, helping you find relationships and connections in your data that may have previously gone unnoticed. You can even visualize your data with presentation mode, taking your data storytelling to the next level. Pricing is based on storage, not licenses, and that ensures that you get the most bang for your buck. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify data analytics, your data analytics, with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. This will be interesting. My next question, you know, centers around scalability, and some previous guests would be scalability of the technology of a product, but also, you know, there's always interesting things in scalability of a business. So I'm curious about how you approach scaling Establish, right? And is there any interesting areas where you've had to fight this as you've grown?
What we had to do was go slow to go fast. And this was one of the hardest things for us to battle and hardest things for me to be patient around. We had to build all of these new systems that were not like battle tested in the beginning, right? So as I said, we were a PR firm, and then we've added so many new branches of fulfillment. So we had to not just go out and market and sell and bring new clients on, because that would break us, right? We needed to make sure that the things that we were doing were actually working. It's like this weird balance between you need to move fast and with speed, and yet you also need to move thoughtfully. That's one of our core values, is be fast but thoughtful. It's a really interesting balance when you get it right, because I think it's what leads to really quality products or customer journeys or new enhancements to whatever it is that you're building. It's when you're trying to move very fast and you're able to fail relatively fast, or you're able to succeed relatively fast, and then you learn and you stack on top of that. So for us, we had to go slow before we could go fast. And when it comes to scale now, it's a matter of really similar to guarding culture within the company, we also want to guard the culture of the clients that we bring on. So we're looking for founders actively that match the culture and match this like exciting entrepreneurship spirit that we feel so deeply and that we know resonates with the people that we work with. So, yeah.
So, Michael, as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
I would say I'm most proud of the success that the founders we've worked with and their success. So one thing that's really unique about our business model is we feel that we play a bigger part in furthering humanity, because we work with so many startups. We worked with, at this point, around 200 or so just early stage startup founders with this new specific process that we have. And the way that we get so excited and the way that I'm able to be proud of what we're doing is every one of those founders is building a venture scale opportunity. So that means we're impacting literally hundreds of millions, if not obviously billions of people worldwide. So I'm just excited for the day too that we interact with like the next unicorn, right? The company that is literally in day-to-day usage. Like, for example, we work with a lot of life sciences, biotech, medtech, a lot of space tech even. Those things literally are changing the world. For that reason, I'm just really proud that we are able to play a part in the earliest days of those companies. And we're going to be able to look back 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and who knows where those companies are going to be. And we worked with them at the earliest stage when they were just getting started. And that's going to be a really cool feeling.
Okay, let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
I think that the times that we've had the most strife and the times that we've had the least amount of progress, it's typically when we hire the wrong person, especially for key roles. We sometimes would give people too much time to try and adjust to what it is that we were doing. We hired a director role about a year ago, and this director role did not end up being a good fit, which is fine. We just kept being like, okay, they are going to figure it out, or maybe we should be more open-minded, or maybe there is going to be this big change. And I think from all these different times that we've brought people onto the team, we've just never really seen past a certain point people make these drastic changes. And for that reason, we really guard who it is that we bring into the company. It's probably one of the most sacred things, because for us, we know it's like a cancer that comes in and spreads. For example, the most simple thing would be someone with a bad attitude. The bad attitude impacts your A players, impacts everyone. They see people maybe holding themselves to different standards. That lowers their typical standards. So for us, a lot of the big problems that we've had go back to us just making the wrong decisions on hiring. That's something that we have learned to develop new processes around for having multiple decision makers or multiple leaders on our team interview each person that comes in and make sure that we all get a good feeling about who it is before ever just making an offer.
Okay, so this will be fun. Tell me about the future for Establish. What is the future for the business and for your team?
Yeah, we're just continuing to scale. So we've really hit this point now to where we're about to scale, right? So how you asked earlier, tell me about scalability. Like I would say leading up to the last 3 months, 6 months even, we were really not trying to grow. It was more of a maintain, fine tune, and improve. Whereas now we've essentially built a really robust system for improving the likelihood of a startup to raise capital, especially during one of the worst times in history for raising venture capital. That's what we're really going to double down on, is essentially starting to tell more people about us, talk more, go to more events, host our own events and so forth, scaling our marketing strategy so that we can bring on more clients and help more startups. Our goal for this year is to raise $250 million with the clients that we have. Last year, we raised nearly $100 million, first year for us actually tracking and developing this process. Immediate short term, $250 a year, and I think we can get close to $1 billion per year in terms of capital that was committed to the clients that we work with over the next 5 years, which is really exciting for me.
Michael, let's switch to you. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
I wouldn't say that there's one individual that really gets me fired up. You know what I mean? Like I could give the typical answer of an Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, or some major entrepreneur out there. I'm not necessarily motivated like that. I think I'm at the point now where I just respect anyone that's in the game in general. Anyone that's trying to build, especially because I feel like when you're first getting started in business, I look up to a lot of people typically for motivation. At least that's how I used to be. I would look up to people to get excited and to be motivated. And now I'm just way more disciplined. Don't get me wrong. I am very inspired by what other people are able to build. But for me, I'm way more inspired when I can understand what it takes for people to build it. So for example, when I meet real entrepreneurs in real life that have companies that are larger than mine, so people that are doing hundreds of millions of dollars a year, just hearing about their journey on a one-to-one level, that is where it just blows my mind, the sophistication that they have versus where we're at. And it really helps me understand like, wow, we obviously need to get better. There is a reason they are doing hundreds of millions of dollars and we are not. So for me, that is what really gets me excited now, is hearing the inside stories, the inside look, the insider look per se, from these entrepreneurs that I can actually have a real relationship with. That is who I look up to probably most now.
Okay, Michael, last question. This is actually going to fit in nicely with what you were saying earlier about the next big thing. So you get on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built that next big thing, either a prototype or something, but they're jazzed about it and they can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice are you going to give them, having gone down this road a bit and supported many startups through this?
This is going to be way harder and way longer than you think, but it's infinitely worth it. I feel like sometimes in the early days, getting excited is very important. I always say that there is a delusional optimism that founders have, and it is their greatest asset, and it is also their greatest enemy, because sometimes the delusion goes too great, but it also is what allows people to have vision, and it allows them to have different perspectives, and it's what allows them to build the future. Being able to balance that delusional optimism and not let the ego hold you back from asking for help and hearing about what has actually worked up to this point, not so much innovation to where you think you are the smartest human on planet Earth and your way is the only way. Because we encounter founders all the time, unfortunately, that do you know, maybe need to raise capital, but they always try and do it themselves. They try and do it their way. They try and go their way first. And then 3 to 4 months later, they come back, didn't work out, and they're in a worse off cash position, for example. And then their likelihood of raising or their timeline to raise is so much shorter and so much lower. So what I would suggest is, obviously, like I said, it's harder and longer than you think, but it's absolutely worth it. So making sure you get that outside help, and then, yeah, I'd love to meet someone like that on the plan. That sounds like a great plan, Ryan.
That's fantastic advice and fits well with what you offered Establish. Well, Michael, thank you for being on the show today, and thank you for telling the creation story of Establish.
Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate the time.
And this concludes another chapter of Coat Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.